Welcome to this amazing, mind-blowing podcast.
I am on Zoom with Suze Wilson. How are you, Suze?
Good, thanks. Atmario Matthew.
So, Suze has recently published an article in The Conversation about the political narrative surrounding this election, the idea of polls and bandwagons and, I suppose, narratives in general of the running parties. Suze, could you perhaps, to start off, explain the bandwagon effect and how this affects voting, like the idea of polling, etc.?
Yeah, so there's researchers who've looked at the role of political polls in the process of, not just informing the public how people are thinking, but actually shaping people's expectations about how they should vote. And mm-hmm. the bandwagon effect is basically, if we see that a given party is, performing really well in the polls and another one is performing really badly, because we don't typically like to be associated with losers, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That will influence people to actually get on board with the party that is ahead. So in effect, rather than the poll simply informing people's opinion, it's actually influencing their opinion. And that's, there's a real tension here because on the one hand, people are naturally curious, to get a gauge on things. But on the other hand, polls, different groups engage in polls. We don't necessarily understand, and they often have vested interests that motivate them to engage in polling. We don't necessarily always know all that we need to know about their methodology. Mm-hmm. And so there can be this, if you like, problematic kind of influencing that's going on when really the only poll that should actually ever count is the vote we each make, on election day or in the, as a early vote.
Yeah, and I suppose, another key factor as well, especially we've seen in more recent years, especially maybe with social media as well, is personality seems to be quite a big factor in all of these. Where does personality come into all of this? Like, does it, and what is the idea of, I think it was followership and that whole,
So, people, we never know what's necessary in people's hearts and minds when they're in the polling booth, right? But we do know that the policies of different parties play at least some role in the decisions that voters make. But we also know that their perspectives, particularly on the leaders of parties, and also their opinion, if you like, about their local candidates, those kind of personal factors play some role in shaping people's decisions. Quite how influential they are will vary between individuals. So that then kind of leads us into thinking about, well, what do we know about what people or how people process and make sense of leadership? And what we know is that every person, if you like, has their own personal kind of theory of what leadership looks like, which is influenced by their own life experiences but also social norms. And effective leaders are, if you like, those who are better able to mirror those sort of expectations, so that we look to them and we think, yep, they're one of us. And we look at their pattern of behaviours and we go, yep, they're doing it for us. So there's that sense of being beneficial, serving our interests. And then kind of the third factor to sustain that sense of that's my person is the belief or the, if you like, the track record of that person actually delivering to those needs. So all of that then shapes people's kind of perception that person's a leader, that person's the kind of leader that I like, that person's a leader who will deliver the kinds of things that I'm looking for. And that plays a role in how people then vote. So even though we don't have a presidential system. We don't directly vote for the Prime Minister. We vote for our electorate MP and our party vote. Party leaders clearly play, you know, an influential role in all of that.
We've seen Winston Peters this election campaign seems to be quite influential, and NZ First seemed to poll quite well. He seems to be appealing to, I suppose, a demographic that have felt relatively left out, I suppose, in terms of, and his narrative seems to be quite appealing to that left out demographic of older people.
Yeah, I mean, I think New Zealand First's positioning for a long time has been, you know, closer to kind of populism than any of the parties. So that sense of us and them and those people, they're kind of the elites and we the underdog, you know, we need someone to stand up for us, and that's kind of the space he's sought to play in. But, you know, I think what he is doing differently this time is he is very, you know, I think very clearly kind of giving a nod and a wink, you know, to a particular group, so those influenced by conspiratorial worldviews, you know, those that are on a, if you like, a particular bandwagon around their, what they think co-governance is, what they think the treaty does and doesn't say. And, yeah, I mean, if you like, pandering to those kinds of, if I put it politely, post-truth perspective, I think it's quite concerning, right? You know, I think there's a, I think he's stepping over much more strongly into the kind of populism that we've seen, you know, in other countries, lead to really problematic outcomes.
And a key part of your article as well was narratives. Anyway, I suppose we've kind of been talking about narratives just now. Could you perhaps contextualise narratives for this election, such as, like, you focus on Chris Hipkins' narrative and the idea that narratives are quite important to the campaigns of these politicians?
Yeah. So there's always a lot of noise, you know, in any kind of political discourse. You know, a particularly important thing for leaders to do is to try and, if you like, craft an overall message that allows people to make sense of what's going on. And different parties are offering us, if you like, different competing messages. So, you know, Labor's message is kind of a blend somehow between defending their achievements to date and what it is that they propose that they would do going forward. And they're trying to, if you like, essentially characterise themselves as, you know, safe and serving certain interests. National is the main opposing party, if you like, has the, if you like, the natural advantage that all opposing parties always have of being able to attack the government's track record. And, you know, is making a series of promises about what we will do. And, and their framing of, you know, getting the country back on track, it essentially, if you like, problematises the current government's performance. You know, the clear subtext of getting our country back on track is that under that lot, things have gone off track. The challenge, I think, is that, you know, while we expect a degree of hyperbole in political debate, we ought to be mindful when that's, if you like, tipping again over the line from just kind of, you know, gilding the lily to actually, and excuse my French here, but this is what the researchers talk about, but actually engaging in a bullshit statement, which is more of a populist kind of tactic where, it's not so much, so bullshit is, if you like, not so much that I'm trying to lie to you. It's just I literally don't care what the truth is. I'm going to say what I'm going to say on the basis that it's going to appeal in some way, possibly to your baser instincts, your fear, your anger, your resentment, your grievance, rather than, you know, something more aspirational. And so when they, you know, when they characterise Labor as, you know, the most incompetent government ever, there's a very strong statement, we should look to, well, what do the facts actually tell us? And there is a clear counter narrative that can be launched against that to say, actually, you are veering over the line in making that statement. By all means, there are criticisms that can clearly be levelled at the current government. But to characterise it as the most incompetent government ever, I think, it's a real stretch. it's just appealing to people being pissed off.
I suppose part of the incumbent rise of populism that we've seen across the world is this idea of real facts and real logic behind these facts just seem to kind of get blown aside because people... we've seen it a lot with some of these debates going on where when either party, or especially National, are being pushed to, I suppose, provide solid numbers, they often don't or they refuse to. But a lot of people don't seem to care because... it's this idea of they're appealing to these people of that Labor's put the New Zealand off the rails and they need to get them on track.
Yes. I mean, and populism generally works in this fashion. So I'm not characterising National's policy position or party overall, if you like, as a populist party. It's not, we the downtrodden versus the elites. It doesn't mean that. But it plays to that kind of post. It is playing with that post-truth kind of narrative framing a lot more. And what it's tapping into is that a lot of people are feeling like life is pretty shit right now, right? And nobody in their right mind should deny that feeling.
Yeah.
Right. The question is though whether or not it is. Reasonable to blame, the current government for all of that.
Yeah.
Whether it is, if you like, reasonable to just act on the basis of that emotion rather than try to actually assess the policies and really think about, who is it that, better serves your actual interests rather than your current mood. Because we've all been in, bad mood and done something that we later regret, right? So, I am trying to encourage people to just sit back and try and think carefully about the situation. Understand that there are certain, if we come back to issues of key facts, is it plausible to say, that what we have is the most incompetent government ever? Well, what we know is our inflation, is below the OECD average. Our unemployment remains low. Our government debt levels are actually very low relative to the OECD average. That small issue that was the pandemic, kind of has consumed most of the last few years, proportionally we have far fewer deaths than most other places. Yeah. Now, all of that suggests that trying to characterise what we have as the most incompetent government is a very highly partisan view. If it's veering towards the extremes of what's a credulous statement to make, because it cannot be, it's very difficult to substantiate it when you actually look at facts, right? Yeah. As voters, it's always hard to know, oh, but this party promises this and this party promises this. Will they actually deliver? Those are good questions to ponder. But someone who's just telling you they're to blame, we want to be careful about that because, focusing on trying to blame everybody else or blame some other group for the things that are difficult in life, that is where kind of the roots of extremism often end up lying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Suze, for coming on to speak with us today.
You're welcome.
It's been very insightful, especially with everything going on surrounding this election.
Yeah. I think it's difficult for people to try and make sense of what's going on. Treating the whole thing as a boxing match, I think, is really unhelpful.
Yeah.
Important policy issues here, and there's something about, are we going to as a nation, try to think about, you know, where our interests really lie, or are we just going to indulge our being in a bad mood?
All of our content lives online at r1.co.nz.